time. And it also indicates where additional financing by communities may be needed for those projects. But overall, it became clear that the needs really considerably exceed the existing resources. In putting together the infrastructure inventory, the scope of it, one, we developed a web-based system. And what's unique about this web-based system, you know, one, it was done in an extremely short period of time. We were basically had about six months in which to do this inventory. And so this system was developed such that as a community entered in its projects and answered a series of questions, it then automatically assigned it a priority in terms of high, medium, or low. And I'll show you in just a minute what those priority breakdowns were. And it also then allowed us to capture information. One of the things that we're currently working on is different ways that we can filter so we can provide you with different reports. So, for example, Chair Witt, in your district, we would be able to do a run of, you know, all the projects that were submitted in your district so that you could see what those needs were that were submitted by the communities that participated. I emphasize voluntary participation because not all communities did choose to participate. Many did, but some of the very largest communities, probably the most good example is Portland, did not input any infrastructure into here. And that's because I think the communities that were motivated to put projects into the inventory were ones that needed to seek state or federal financing help. Mm-hmm. And Portland has, you know, the capacity to be able to go out and get financing on its own. So it didn't necessarily need to turn to the state. However, it was very, very supportive of the effort that we were doing here, because it does shine a light on the needs of infrastructure across the state. I want to emphasize that the cost estimates are preliminary. I think that's what the communities entered in was their best estimate at the time. The total projects for the inventory, now there were 3,200 projects total entered into the inventory, and they covered a 20-year period of time. Some of the projects that we asked not to be included were those that were federally or state-owned highways or streets. And the reason for that is that inventory is already captured by ODOT, so we weren't trying to duplicate what they were doing. However, we did ask that transportation projects necessary for development of industrial and commercial sites, rail and port projects were included. So the analysis and information I'll be giving you is based on the raw numbers provided by the communities. And you do have the summary document, even though it's fairly thick, that one right there, that provides a lot of the information about the methodologies and the summary of information that we gleaned from the data initially. The full 3,200 projects was given to Legislative Fiscal Office for their review. In terms of the priority criteria, this priority criteria was approved by the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission. And the high priority projects, I mentioned, that as communities entered it in, the web-based software then sorted according to those priorities. The high priorities were ones that needed to be ready to go and necessary for economic development within the next 3 years. So examples of that included water systems out of compliance, rail lines for business expansion, sewer nearing capacity. So those were kind of the highlights for the high priority projects. For the medium, these were a little bit further out in terms of time frame. So you're pushing it out about 4 to 6 years in terms of necessary for economic development. But this category also included community facilities such as a city hall or a fire station or a library. And then low priority included all the other projects. For example, a project that may not be needed for another 10 years. This next slide gives you examples of the kinds of projects that were entered into the inventory. And you can see that there are a fairly wide range of different types of projects. So I'd mentioned water and sewer projects, but it also included port projects like jetty repair or telecommunication needs, energy production facilities, downtown improvements, environmental cleanup. Of the 3,200 projects that were total entered into the system now, and I want to stress that those were projects over a 20-year period, but what was really revealing to me is that 60% of those projects were development or population growth related, which really gives you kind of a clue. We know that Oregon is going to be growing fairly rapidly in the years ahead, and communities, I think, are concerned about being able to be being able to accommodate that growth. 21% of it was due to antiquated systems. We have wooden water pipes in our water systems in Oregon. We have systems that have arsenic or asbestos in them. So they're ones that need to be taken care of. And then there were also projects that were in there for immediate job creation or quality of life. In terms of the overall type of projects, 44% of them were for transportation, looking at the, when we looked at the total cost, and 34% of it were for water and wastewater projects. Kind of focusing now on the top 129 projects, each of the 13 regions were asked to identify their top 10 projects. So those regional boards selected and ranked the projects. And they, we asked them to use the high priority projects in selecting their top 10. And I think the request from Ways and Means was a way to, you know, narrow down further what the highest priorities were in communities. And again, we asked them to come up with projects that were had a large economic benefit, an impact to the region, and was consistent with their regional strategy, and also was one that was ready to proceed. Of those top projects, the total cost was around $580 million. This was, again, an estimate. The financing needed of that was $375 million, more than half, of which when we looked at the type of funding that we have available, financing available in OECDD, most of it's loan-related. We had about $213 million over those that three-year period, and that would be from looking at what we have in Special Public Works Fund, the Water Wastewater Fund, Community Development Block Grant, Safe Drinking Water. That gap then left about $163 million that was not funded. So that was just only that kind of subset of the needs. So in summary, this infrastructure inventory, I think, is going to be a very valuable tool, and it is a snapshot in time. I think we do need to understand that this is the projects that communities needed at the time, but it didn't include the disasters. It also doesn't include any, you know, immediate opportunity projects that you wouldn't know about until they happen. And that we do see that needs considerably exceed existing state resources. I think you've heard other testimony here before the committee about the importance of adequate infrastructure for new business and population growth and for addressing antiquated systems. Our next steps in with the inventory is that we did this in a fairly short period of time, we need to look at it and kind of slice and dice it in different ways and try to narrow down what kind of request that we need to make before the next session for the 2009-11 budget. But we will be using the infrastructure inventory in helping us put together a request for recapitalization of the Special Public Works Fund. So with that, I'd also like to recognize the role that Jackie Yoder played. She's in the audience here, as well as Karen Homolak, because they put in a tremendous amount of work to make this happen, as did our information technical people, Helen Wang and Cliff. So thank you very much. Kind of credits, you know, at the end of a movie.
Absolutely.
So I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Well, thank you very, very much, Ann. This is really a fascinating list here. And while you say that you did it in a relatively short period of time, just looking at my own district, as I go down through the communities, the projects that are highlighted here, I would just go exactly. I mean, in my own mind, you've hit the nail right on the head here, too. And in terms of the absolute critical needs that are faced by a number of our communities. And interesting to note also that many of these are due to growth. So it's a consequence of good things happening, but along with good things happening, we have to accommodate that growth as well. So my apologies to you for not having a larger committee here.
Well, I'd be happy if you ever want me to come back at another time. As we have more analysis of the data, we'd be happy to present that to the committee.
Thank you. Now, in terms of the priorities that you had established, short, long-term, and medium, I think we're really the way it's broken out. How are those going to be prioritized, other than there is a short-term, near-term need? Is in terms of funding, the near-term ones rise to the top, and then how do we, of all these many, many projects, how do those shake out?
Well, as we go through our priority process at OECD, so we have this larger list, which is kind of the really big picture list. As a project comes in to us for determination of funding, we have a priority. We have more refined priority criteria. So we look at not only readiness to proceed, but technical and financial feasibility. Because I mentioned that many of the awards, or most of the awards that we give out, are loans. We have to look at, does the community have the capacity to be able to pay back the loan? Is it technically feasible? From an engineering standpoint, where is it in terms of, we work very closely with Department of Human Services and Department of Environmental Quality to look at where they've identified that there are systems in trouble. Those systems that have regulatory issues are ones that usually rise up to the top in terms of what we would fund, say, with the Safe Drinking Water Fund or even with the Water Wastewater Fund. We also look at the impact to job creation. So if it would have a large job creation, important for economic development, that also would receive a higher priority criteria. So we take those projects in, and then we do an initial ranking, and then we see which ones kind of rise up to the top that we would fund. And then from those projects, we launch into a more in-depth analysis to see whether or not they meet the criteria, the program, and the feasibility requirements.
So, I mean, in essence, we're not only investing in the infrastructure, which will generate economic development, but it's also a direct investment into local community workforces.
Oh, very much so. I think one of the things that's really interesting is to look nationwide and even worldwide what's going on in terms of infrastructure investment. Our states to the Washington, California, have had large bond measures to deal with infrastructure. I just heard recently that North Carolina is also putting forward a large bond measure to deal with infrastructure. And, of course, one of the reasons why commodity prices have risen over the last several years, making construction more expensive, is because countries like China have been investing heavily in infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
So, if you're going to be able to set the table for economic development to occur, infrastructure is one of those things that you need to be able to have there available.
Well, I would encourage anyone who's interested in both the needs and the planned projects for our state to take a look at this, because it appears to be quite comprehensive.
Thank you.
you've covered a lot of territory in a short amount of time.
We've been busy over the last 5-6 months, yes.
Well, a job very well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Sure. I'm going to take my computer down.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that would care to comment on any of these, in essence, public work projects? I'm not seeing any. Patrick, it appears that along with the changes this morning, our next panel is unable to meet our time schedule.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my conversations with the folks from the USS Ranger Museum, they indicated they would not be able to make it to this Capitol before 9 o'clock, and we were scheduled to be on the floor at 9 o'clock. So it's my understanding that that they're going to try to meet with some of the committee members separately, outside of the committee hearing.
Okay. All right, and I can see a couple of folks, anyways, that I suspect may have shown up specifically for that presentation. I'm more than happy to allow time on the record for anyone who would like to comment on that. Otherwise, we'll probably be looking at, if there is a formal presentation before our committee, it's going to be at a later date. So, anything more for the good of the committee? I believe this is our last informational meeting, at least that's been scheduled so far.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is our last currently scheduled meeting.
Well, I hope the rest of my committee members have that. And with that, I'm going to adjourn our...